Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
And I'm Essie Cook.
Yes, we're spicing things up this episode. Our co-host Essie is a conservative political commentator. You might recognize her as a contributor on CNN, or from seeing her on Watch What Happens Live, or as a beloved Jeopardy champion. And she's going to help us break down the whirlwind consuming us these days. First, before we get into the Republican convention, vibe check. Essie, thoughts on the announcement that Alec and Ilaria Baldwin have a new show coming to TLC?
Well, Alyssa, I would expect nothing less from Senora DeLulu than to decide, in all my craziness, yes, let's put a camera on it. Yes, let's invite cameras into my crazy world. I'd expect nothing less. And honestly, it's the content I've been waiting for.
Are we going to have a follow-up podcast about how we've hate-watched it and all of our thoughts?
100%. And I believe you and Erin and I really started this as
we did.
As content, right? Like this,
we did.
This obsession with Ilaria. So it would only be fitting and natural that I think the three of us, I'm inserting myself into this.
Absolutely.
Continue it because someone's got to. Someone has got to.
Someone's got it. And look, Essie, I saw some New York Post musings that they had actually already started filming during his trial.
Sweet baby Jesus, thank God. I mean, someone's looking out for us because in this hellscape of political news, we need the Baldwins. We need Ilaria not knowing how to pronounce a cucumber. We need this. We need this. We need yoga poses on the stove.
Oh, yeah, I was right? Just going to say yoga poses on the stove. That shit is so crazy. The stove is for cooking. Or as Carrie Bradshaw would say, storing sweaters, nothing else.
Exactly. So I'm here for it. I just hope it's not like scripted. You know how like the Chrisleys, like some of these shows
yes.
are like completely scripted and you feel like, oh, we're only getting what they want us to see. No.
I want sister wives. I want sister
yes.
wives. That's what I want, okay? I yes. want Janelle rolling her eyes at Mary. That's what I want.
Me too. Show us the good, the bad, and the very ugly. I want to see it all.
This week on Hysteria, Essie Cupp joins to talk all things Republican National Convention. She and I delve into Bennifer and cover bands in Sani Petty, and then a special new segment, Hysteria's Get In Losers We're Running for Office debuts. Essie, the news has been relentless this past week. Trump survived an assassination attempt at a rally in Pennsylvania. He picked J.D. Vance as his VP on the ticket. The Republican National Convention is in full swing, and all of New York is experiencing the worst swamp ass you could ever imagine. So we're just going to dive in.
Okay, let's dive in.
Okay, so Monday night kicked off the primetime programming for the RNC. There's been a lot of talk about bringing people together and turning the temperature down. Mm. Vibe check. Was that the vibe? Did they turn it down on Monday night?
I didn't see a whole lot of turning it down. This is so Trump. Even in Trump's announcement that he threw out his old script, right?
Mm-hmm.
He had to get in there. You know, my old script about how awful everybody is. I was going to say how gross and terrible and wacko and awful everybody is, but I'm not going to say it. I still think it. And I'm saying it now, of course. Yeah. But I'm not going to say it on Thursday. Thursday, I'm giving a unifying speech. I mean, they don't know how to do this. Just today, they're, you know, sharing memes on social media about Joe Biden falling downstairs. I mean, there's no taking temperature down. And I don't even blame them so much because they're responding to what their voters want.
Right.
And I don't think their voters want unity. I don't think their voters want to take the temperature down. That's not why they bought into Trump in the first place. So I don't see any.
Also, when you kick off your primetime programming with Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Yeah, that says something.
Something tells me that's a flag that things aren't going to be chill. She was, I think, followed by Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, who is among,
yes.
I mean, he is the male Marjorie Taylor Greene.
He's crazy. I mean, yeah, if people don't know, he's the North Carolina Lieutenant Gov, running for Gov, who said, listen, sometimes people need to be killed. I mean,
sometimes.
Sometimes. People need killing. So, yeah, if you were going to take the temperature down after an assassination attempt, you would take him off the dais. Program.
That's what I would think. So, did you watch Monday night?
I did. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what did you make of Trump's demeanor in the box?
Yeah, I couldn't tell if he was trying to look statesmanlike, you know?
Or is he having, like, depression?
Yeah, I mean, he was subdued, right?
He
was subdued. But he was like, yeah, I mean, it felt like he was also, like, hate-watching some speeches.
Yeah.
Like, last night, I thought he was, like, hate-watching Nikki Haley's speech.
Oh, my God. But, like, also so focused on it.
Yes.
Like what, in is she a lot of the something? Other speeches, like a lot of the other speeches on Monday night, he was in the box. By the way, it was his first appearance with JD. They did not really speak.
No, they did not.
He was talking to everybody on the other side of him, but he spoke through most of the speeches. But yes. Nikki Haley, when Nikki came out last night, he sat down, slouched a little bit in his seat, and just, he didn't glower, but he did not blink a lot.
Yeah, he was super focused. But yeah, I've noticed too, he seems a little deflated. I don't know.
Something. Do you think, here are my questions. Let's do a little conspiracy theory. A little political witchery. Mm-hmm. Is he sad from his near assassination? Which, like, I get. Like, I would get if that had fucked him up a little, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a lot to handle. Did he get bullied into JD Vance? Because I was not catching, like, super stoked vibes. I mean, JD came in and they weren't even, like, leaning. You know when you sit next to someone at a concert and you, like, arm lean towards each other? They were not arm leaning in the box.
Yes. I think it's C. I think it's that Trump doesn't want anyone getting attention besides him. And there he was in a room full of people that were getting attention, and he just has to sit there. Yeah. I think this makes him very uncomfortable. And I think same with the J.D. Vance pick. All eyes were on J.D. Vance. It was J.D. Vance's day. He was getting all the interviews. And I think that just fundamentally makes Trump uncomfortable. Even if he's, like, behind the Vance pick, I don't think he was. I think that was Don's idea, Don Jr.'s idea. And Trump really wanted to go with Burgum. Mm. But
a lot of money, not a lot to say.
Yes. Yeah. But I think, no, I think he was just like, when's it my turn? I am the only one that matters here.
So Nikki Haley's speech, I would love your thoughts. I have to, look, I'm not like the biggest Nikki fan. I do think in the Republican Party, she's more, you know, my speed, I guess if I had to pick someone. Mm-hmm. What'd you think of the speech?
Speech was great, but I was very sad. I was sad because I was a Nikki person. She's not a perfect candidate for me, but those don't exist anymore. She was good enough. And I was really happy that she started going after Trump. And I was really happy that 40% of voters in, like, a dozen states chose her and took 40% of the Republican vote away from Donald Trump. I thought, great, there is a glimmer of hope. And so, yeah, I've been disappointed that she just went right back and endorsed him. And now
full
she's
endorsement.
Stumping for him. Yeah, it makes me sad. But none of them, I mean, there are very few Kinzingers and Cheneys these days. They all come home.
It's really just the two of them. And Mitt Romney. We give Mitten some props because he stands up for what's right.
He's also retiring, we should point out.
He is. I know. I mean, if I were him, I'd retire too. Life is short. Why would he spend one more minute? I mean, what did he say about J.D. Vance that he was, like, the absolute worst?
He's like, I could not respect a person less than I respect J.D. Vance.
I mean, and that was months ago. That was, like, when he got elected to the Senate. So then, after Nikki's done, I thought this was, like, look, you and I are both nerds when it comes to this stuff. And I love stagecraft. I love how things are produced. So to me, the Nikki Haley followed by Ron DeSantis was also a vibe. And what did you think about Ron DeSantis' speech and Trump's reaction to it? Aside from, I'll give you my immediate reaction, which was, why was he yelling? It was so loud. I was like, you have a microphone. You don't have to shout.
He is so weird. I'm going to whisper this because I don't want this to get out.
He's uncomfortable in his own skin.
He is so weird. Yeah, he's like a Manchurian candidate. I always thought this about him, that he's kind of just like like parroting what someone told him to say to donors or whatever it is. I don't think he's got too many ideas of his own. And so he shouts to seem credible and authentic and genuine. Like it's coming from somewhere inside him, but it's not. And so I think he does that to be like, see how much I believe what I'm saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And he's like, he's going to bust a gut. But the thing about it was like watching it last night, because Essie, for people who do not watch these things like we do, it's pretty unusual for the president, for the nominee to come in and watch everything.
Yeah. I mean, yes, the producer in me as well is like, no, no, no. This is what I did. This is what I liken it to. When I was getting married, you know, you have like a rehearsal dinner the night before. Yeah. I wanted no part of that. I was like, you're not going to see me before I come down the aisle. That would take away from this moment and the drama. So my family comes into town and my parents take everybody out for dinner the night before because I don't want to be seen. It should be that way.
He should want to just
appear on Thursday to a roaring crowd instead of sitting in the box like those Statler brothers.
Waldorf and Statler from the Muppets. I knew exactly what you meant. The thing, too, is I know he loves Dana White from the UFC.
Yeah.
But he's entering every night like he is Randy Macho Man Savage.
But isn't he? Isn't he?
I mean, if he could throw a chair, but I'm not sure he could. And so he comes in and he does this kind of like half-hearted fist pump. And they walk in slowly. The first night, I nearly pissed myself because Lee Greenwood, when he was singing God Bless America, was just freestyling the lyrics. Like he just kept going and repeating certain verses and no one knew when to sit down. And I was like, this is so weird and awkward. And then it finally ended and he sat down and then he was clearly that night. I feel like all the applause made him emotional, like that he had almost died.
Yeah.
But like he did it again last night. And I was like, girl, you can only do that once. It's like walking down the aisle. And then he sits up there and he is like Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator. He is just sitting there watching people perform for him. He's like, let's see what you can do. And everybody comes out. So I fell asleep before Sarah Huckabee Sanders, but I watched her this morning. And everyone tells these stories about the one time someone was mean to them and then Trump was nice.
Yeah.
And that's the story. Like, could you imagine if I became governor of New York and I went out and I was like, let me tell you about the time Barack Obama told me that I got my new outfit was really cute. Like, could you imagine? But that's what they're doing. Sarah Huckabee Sanders was literally like, when everyone was mean to me at the correspondence dinner, he told me I was beautiful. What? And he loved it.
This is what gets him off, obviously.
Yeah.
And we're not a party of ideas and policies anymore. It's all personality. And so telling your story of how nice Trump is, I mean, it's very North Korea. It's giving North Korea.
It's very, very leader.
It's very dear leader.
Yeah.
But this is the party now. They don't even have to pretend. Like, I remember at the last RNC, the virtual one.
Yeah.
There was a lot of this. People would get up and tell stories about Donald Trump and how great he was and how nice he was. And they're not even like embarrassed of that now. That's the program.
Right.
That's the program. That's the party.
So let's talk about the VP pick a little bit, because I'm interested in your thoughts. You know, for John Kerry, I helped oversee his VP selection and rollout, and I did it for Obama, too. And so I love a VP rollout.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you my 2 cents.
Yeah.
I really thought, you know, pre-shooting, of course, pre-near assassination by dietary assistant, I thought he's going to pick a woman. It seemed so stupid to me that if he – like, it would lock up if he picked now listen, she did me dirty the other night, but I was kind of like, Katie Britt seems like a genius choice. She's smarter than Palin, but she has all the upside. She could lock up the whole, like, trad wife, you know, demographic from the suburbs of Virginia over, you know, out to Boise, Idaho. Mm-hmm. But he went with JD. And he didn't announce him until 20 minutes before he showed up on the floor. And I was like, that can't be right. And then I like dug in a little bit and it's like, no, J.D. Vance found out 20 minutes beforehand that he was the pick. So what does that say to you? Does it say that Trump was being his Mark Burnett producer self and wanted like the suspense? Or do you think he really was kind of making up his mind until the last minute?
I think he was making up his mind, and we got guidance all day Monday that, like, it's not going to be who the media is talking about.
Right.
Bullshit. It's who everyone was talking about and what everyone assumed. And so I think there was a little chaos around it, and I don't think it was decided. Listen, we are political people, and by that I mean, like, conventional political people. So we look at, okay, what demographic holes could he fill with this? What experiential background holes could he fill with this? What could he do to complement the ticket? But that's not how he sees anything. So picking another white guy from a state Trump has won twice and is definitely going to win again seems odd and impolitic to people like you and I. But for him, it's irrelevant, right? He's just doubling down on MAGA, doubling down on the image of him. He's a mini Trump. And J.D. Vance said the only thing he needed to, which was, I would not have certified the 2020 election.
Right.
Bing, bam, boom, VP is selected. So he's not worried about the things that conventional politicos worry about when they pick a VP. He doesn't care about putting a woman on or anything like that. It's the loyalty and who's like my mirror image.
But see, that's interesting to me because he's such a narcissist that I actually would have thought that, or maybe now it has started to sink in, that everyone's talking about JD as like taking on the MAGA mantle, that he's going to be the person who carries it forward, which is already kind of putting Trump in retirement in the speak, right? It's like, oh, this is great. We've got like our new person. Isn't that, I don't know. I feel like that's going to really fucking rub him the wrong way and may already be rubbing him the wrong way.
Yeah, I agree. And I had the same thought because the even Don Jr. is saying that J.D. Vance is the future of the Republican Party.
Right.
And I was talking to someone very smart and connected to Trump world yesterday. And he said, Donald Trump doesn't care about the future of the Republican Party. He doesn't care about the country. He doesn't care about anything but himself. But Don Jr. cares about the future of the Republican Party because he cares about his family business.
Fuck.
And how he can use the future of the Republican Party to aid and abet his family business. And so getting his pick in there, someone who's young, someone who can do a term with Trump and then two more terms, like this is what Don Jr.'s thinking. And that makes sense to me. I don't know if Trump will buy it. The fact that Trump is we hope, done after one more term might make it go down a little easier that they're looking past him. But yeah, I can see Trump getting very tired of all of this future talk and patting JD on the head and saying, go away now. You need to go away now.
Do you, Essie, where are your spidey senses? Right now, do you feel like come November, it's going to be Trump?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And listen, I take no pleasure in this, obviously.
I don't think you do. I don't think you do. I just think you're smart and I want your opinion.
I didn't vote for Trump ever. I'm not going to again. I voted for Biden in 2020 with the explicit promise that he would be a one-term president. And he did it. He was a transitional president, not a transformational. I was glad he did the job of getting Trump out. I knew I wouldn't like some of his policies and I haven't. But that was okay to me. He's reneging on that promise, and that's not just personally painful. Like, I am put off by this, but it's jeopardizing the future of the country, and I'm pissed about it. I'm pissed at Democrats for not figuring this out earlier, because we were talking about it earlier. I was talking about it 2 years ago, that he shouldn't run again. He's a lovely man, but he should not run again. He cannot run again. I don't know that he can finish this term. And again, I take no pleasure in saying that either. I want to beat Trump.
Right.
Democrats, won't you join me? Is where I'm at. Like, that's where I'm at.
Do you, when they were talking about the VP picks, and again, I'm not saying, like, for all of our listeners, we're talking about the better of evils, right? This is not like, oh, we wanted Trump to pick X, Y, and Z. Did you have someone, but who he picks does matter. And so was there someone that you were hoping he'd pick that would either be moderating or that is an adult and that you would have confidence in as a vice president?
Who would that person be? No, because that would have been Nikki for me, and I knew he wasn't going to pick Nikki.
Right.
No, there's no one sane or moderating left for me. Who would be in the running for that? Right.
Right.
So no, they're all the same. Okay. Doug Burgum maybe because he's just so out of the loop.
Right.
He's so irrelevant to the party. I don't know. Maybe he would have been at least boring. And not incendiary like J.D. Vance. But no, they're all the same to me. And it matters because Trump's old too. He's a time fighter as well and could die in office. But it also doesn't matter because the party is MAGA. The party is what it is.
Can you, so for listeners, you know, we're on the Crooked Network, lots of Democrats, not tons of Republicans. Yeah. But I love two parties. You know, like I grew up, like I think it's interesting. I think that when people can actually exchange ideas, we just end up in a better place. And so can you, for listeners, explain how like the difference between MAGA and being a Republican or a conservative?
Right. So I'm conservative.
Mm-hmm.
That comes with a set of values that don't change regardless of what the party says or the platform or the guy in charge. That's a set of values, and that comes from sort of canonized conservative philosophical thought.
Mm-hmm.
They happened to be values and principles that, in the main, the Republican Party embraced for a century.
Right.
Donald Trump came in and decided that a lot of those policies and principles didn't matter anymore. Principles around national security, foreign policy, lowering the debt and the deficit, family values, tariffs, right? Protectionism, all these things that had been bedrock and not argued among conservatives. He decided they weren't important. And then the party also decided they weren't important. So I believe in all the things I still, I once did. I have not changed, but the party has completely changed and jettisoned the conservatism.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of voters are happy with that. I'm on the outside of that. I'm obviously not happy. I'm dismayed by that. So conservatism still exists. No one can change that.
Right.
The party has become completely co-opted by MAGA.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's just no daylight between the two things anymore. I think if you were a Martian and you came down on Earth and asked, what's a Republican? You'd really have to ask, well, what kind? Like, are you the conservative kind or the MAGA kind? Because the party still houses both, but as a costume, as an identity, it completely wears the MAGA costume.
Who are some of the Republicans out there who are in office still that you think have a moral compass, people who you trust and believe in?
Well, we mentioned Romney, and he's a really good guy.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to you, but Democrats did him very dirty in 2012. He was not the monster that he was painted to be, obviously. But
we know.
Yeah, right? But listen, John Thune is a good person. And, you know, he might become majority leader, you know.
Isn't it like five Johns that are running?
Yeah.
I think it's like, right? It's like John Cornyn, John
Barrasso.
Thune, John Barrasso. They're all like, Mitch McConnell's being circled by a bunch of Johns.
Bunch of white Johns. State of affairs. But like, I know John Thune. But no, see, let me take this back because I know Mike Lee. I know a lot. I know Marco Rubio. They all became something I didn't think they would. You know, Mike Lee, who walks around with a constitution in his pocket.
Right.
You know, suddenly talking about the sham trials. And it's just bewildering. So I don't know who is immune completely from being like MAGA infected. I don't know who that is anymore. I thought I knew these people. I don't.
So one of the people who I was actually really interested in, I'm in New York. I live adjacent her district, was Elise Stefanik when she was first elected to Congress. I think youngest woman elected to Congress. And the Trump train just picked her up. And I just can't believe it. I mean, I know that she is smarter. I mean, I think this is the hard thing. And this can affect all kinds of politicians, right? It's not just MAGA or Republicans. But when people just get co-opted and you know they're better, like you know they're better and they're just not doing better. So that one's kind of a bummer for me.
This is why I'm in therapy, because when this happens to people who you know better, and Elise is a perfect example. She's hardly the only example, right? She's Harvard educated. You could do this with Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, Ted Cruz, right? All of these very well-educated people who once spoke the gospel of conservatism, know what it is, know what it looks like, and they know what it isn't, and they don't care anymore. That's so much worse than the Marjorie Taylor Greens, who's never heard of Hayek, who doesn't know what de Tocqueville is, right? She doesn't know. She doesn't know what it's supposed to be. So you can almost forgive her. Right. But the other ones are a real punch in the gut, because you could remain principled, and they chose not to.
Yeah. So we're recording this on Wednesday. Episode airs on Thursday, the day of Trump's speech. So I'm curious, tonight we have J.D. Vance. He'll give his speech. What do you anticipate from Vance's speech tonight? Like, what do you think his message should or will be? And what do you think Trump's going to do tomorrow night?
J.D. Vance is another one. He's a good speaker. He's intelligent. He's smart. I think he'll say smart things, but I also worry that he's going to be a bit pugilistic and, offensive. We'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I don't know. I don't know how much hand, like, Trump team is going to have. Like, is Chris LaCivita going to oversee the script, you know, that J.D. Vance is reading from? I don't know. So we'll see. And then Trump, who knows, man? I mean, I got the script that he was meant to read the day he announced in 2015. I got it the night before. And I read it, and I thought, wow, this is interesting. It went through his, like, business record and talked about how he had rescued different properties and blah, blah, blah. And I said, oh, well, this is a platform. It's not for me, but there's a business platform in here that makes the case why he should be president. He read none of it, not even the first word, when he came down that escalator the next day. So I have no idea. I'm sure there's something scripted for him to say.
Right.
I'm sure he won't say it. So I don't know.
Yeah. He's just going to Essie.
Freewheel it.
Yeah. What are we going to do? So before we get into Sani Petty, I wanted to do a quick toast, a quick shout out.
Okay.
Essie, I am very sad that Shannon Doherty has passed.
Yeah. Was she important to you growing up, like 90210?
She was. She was. I mean, 90210 came, and it was the first, I think I'm saying this right, I think I was in 10th or 11th grade, and it was the first time a show aired new episodes over the summer instead of reruns. Remember how that used to be on linear television?
Yes.
You'd have the show during the year, during the season, and then the summer would just be reruns.
Yes,
and
right.
So they had new episodes, and I can't even tell you. Like, it has just been such a part of my life. And when she was diagnosed with breast cancer like 10 years ago, it's like, everyone, all listeners, get your mammograms, get your colonoscopies, get all of your self-care checkups, because she fought like a fucking warrior for 10 years. Yeah. And when I woke up, the first thing I did was text Dan Pfeiffer, because we are the exact same age. And in the White House, when I was having a particularly bad day, Dan would find the episode where Andrea Zuckerman gets hit by a speeding car and send it to me. Because when you open up your email, it's just this picture of Andrea Zuckerman very fakely being hit by a car and like her books going everywhere. And so we have been doing the 90210 for a long time together. And when I texted him, heard the People magazine breaking news that she had passed, he was like, I can't believe it. I was just sending this to you. And so for me, I was like, I was very sad. And when Andrea Zuckerman, a.k.a. Real World Gabrielle Carteris, posted that Luke Perry and Brenda were and Shannon Doherty were finally reunited, I just cried like a baby. I cried like a baby. So I just wanted to use this as a moment to remind everyone, get your mammograms. Get your mammograms in honor of Shannon. Go get your mammo.
Yeah.
So, all right, on to something a little lighter. Yes, okay. To Shannon. First, we're going to take a quick break, and SC will be back for a much-needed Sani Petty. Woohoo.
Warning. This product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Vuse is smooth, consistent, and intentionally simple. It's vapor done right. Because when you're free to focus on what really matters, everything just clicks. Find Vuse, that's V-U-S-E, Vuse, at your favorite convenience store.
Underage sale prohibited. Vuse is a vapor product. Website restricted to age 21 plus tobacco consumers. Copyright 2026 RJRVC.
Welcome back to Hysteria, the podcast for religious sunscreen wearers. Before we get to Sani Petty, some announcements for the class. This election has always been about so much more than Biden versus Trump. And now more than ever, down-ballot candidates and grassroots groups are getting lost in the national conversation and need our support. If you're looking for ways to help, join Vote Save America's 2024 volunteer program and take action to support these candidates and groups in your community and across the country. Want to donate your money instead? You can also set up a monthly recurring donation through Vote Save America's Anxiety Relief Program. VSA does the research, and each month they direct your dollars to the grassroots organizations and states and local candidates that need it the most. Then at the end of each month, they'll tell you where your money went. We're just over 100 days out from Election Day, and these people need our help. Go to VoteSaveAmerica.com to get started. This message has been paid for by Vote Save America. You can learn more at VoteSaveAmerica.com, and this ad has not been authorized by any candidate or candidates committee. It's such an uncertain time, but there's one thing that always makes us feel better: buying stuff online and getting involved in progressive politics, obviously. At the Crooked Store, you can do both. Shop a new collection of progressive merch for summer and feel good knowing that a portion of the proceeds from every purchase goes to support organizations doing incredible work across the U.S. to ensure every voice can be heard. Pick up an Only You Can Prevent Gender Reveals tee for your upcoming camping trip, wear a Hot People Vote tee to your next canvassing shift, and grab a Let Women Run Everything hat for your next feminist global takeover picnic. Shop new merch and let your values shine all summer long at Cricut.com/store. Okay, Essie, I have to be honest. Mine's a little combination of Sani and Petty. So since we're spending this week watching the Republican convention, I've had a lot of time to pay attention to the Republican convention, and I am obsessed with the character that nobody is talking about.
Amber Rose?
No. Six Wire, the cover band. Okay. I was like, wait a minute, because I had the convention on in the background. I was in the kitchen making jam, as one does.
Right.
And I'm like, wait a minute. Is that Caught Up in You by 38 Special? One of my favorite songs. Favorite from the movie. Well, one, I always loved it, but my favorite is Whip It, the roller derby movie. Elliot Page was practicing to be part of the roller derby, and Caught Up in You was playing. And ever since then, when the song comes on, I picture myself in the roller derby. And so, you know, I was so into the idea of roller derby that when I was in DC, I had signed up. My roller derby name was going to be Nasty Pelosi. And everyone in the White House was like, you cannot do any of this. You can't come to work with black eyes. You can't call yourself Nasty Pelosi. I thought it was the greatest thing. But anyway, so I hear 38 Special. I am taken back in time. I'm like, this is amazing. And then I'm like, wait, Learn to Fly? Are the Foo Fighters there? I know the Foo Fighters would not get the Republican convention. And then I did a little digging. And it's a cover band, and they are killing it. And they are doing the interlude music, the interstitials, all of it. And honestly, these people are thriving. They have been covered by the Tennessean, which is where they are from. And I can't know enough. I can't learn enough. I'm checking their set lists every night. And I just, on the one hand, I'm petty because I'm like, ha ha, you can't get music because y'all are crazy. On the other hand, I'm kind of like, let these guys live their best lives. This is amazing music.
And are they free for my next party, right?
I mean, Honestly, they've got the Doobie Brothers. They're doing Robert Palmer. And I also feel like you and I like similar music.
Yeah.
So they've got Steely Dan. They've got the Allman Brothers.
Ooh.
I mean, they're doing dad rock in the best way possible.
That's my jam, dad rock.
100%. Dad rock. And so I was just like, thank God for these guys, because literally when everyone, and I noticed it, I don't know, because I saw you on CNN. I think you were on in the morning. And at night, they were actually trying to guess the tune going into each. Like when the band would start playing, they'd be
really? Yeah.
Oh, it's this. And then they're like, oh, no, it's that. And I'm like, no, these people are just giving people life right now. And part of me, at first I thought it was a little funny. Now I'm like, I don't know. The DNC should consider something similar to this because it's groovy.
Except they'll probably get like actual Bono and actual Foo Fighters.
Well, yeah. Though, I mean, that kind of makes it less funny.
Yes, right. It's not as funny. My here's another wedding story. I don't know why everything is relating to my wedding from 10 years ago, but when I we were getting married up in Connecticut, and as WASPs do, and I'm not religious, so we wanted a justice of the peace.
Mm-hmm.
So we went out to interview justices of the peace, and we go to this one guy's house. And he says, you know, I know you're on CNN, and I just want to tell you, there are a lot of us up here. And I said, us who? And he says, celebrities. And I said, tell me more. And he said, well, I don't know if you've seen my work, but in addition to being a justice of the peace, I am also the world's foremost Warren G. Harding impersonator. And I
who
have
knew?
Been... on History Channel and all these other places as Warren G. Harding. And he said, so it's like me, you, and Kevin Bacon live up here.
Stop.
Delusional, but
charming.
Way
charming.
More fun than like a normal justice of the peace who is just a justice of the peace.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah, I love that he led with it. We didn't go with him for obvious reasons, but
because you know he would have like shown up in character.
Yes, and I don't need a reenactment at my wedding, or do I? Or do I?
Maybe I did.
Maybe I did. I'll never know. But this is my way of saying cover bands sometimes more fun than legit bands than the real bands.
I mean, I'm just telling you, they did one thing right this week. They did one thing right. Okay, so that's my Sanny plus Petty. Are you Sanny or Petty?
I'm Sanny plus Petty, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. I do want to talk, and I can't believe these words are escaping my lips.
Okay.
I do want to talk about Bennifer, though I said a year ago when they got married again or whatever, I cannot talk about them anymore because I already gave them like all my attention 10 years ago. All of it. They got it all. I can't do it again. But now I just, can it be over already? Can we stop with the like, who's wearing the ring? Is he in a good mood? Is he smoking? Is he in a bad mood? Where is she? He moved his stuff out. But now she's out with his child. Like,
yeah,
on camera, walking around with Violet Affleck in the Hamptons.
Can
we put
that.
An end to this madness? Please.
What do you think did them in? Was it the Duncan bonanza of commercials?
No. Listen, I don't know her personally, and I don't know Ben Affleck well, but like Ilaria, I am from Boston, and I grew up with guys like Ben Affleck. I know guys like Ben Affleck, right? I know every Sully in the greater Boston area, all right? And my accent's going to come out now that we're talking about
Let's
it. Let's
anyway, do it.
All right? So there is no way that this man wants to be a part of this woman's stage show, right?
Yeah.
And this is not a complete criticism of her. It's just the way she chooses to live is for the cameras. And obviously, like, made a movie about her romance and her life, and it's all about giving herself to the audiences. And that is not for him. That's not for my friend Ben Sully, okay? He wants to live a quiet life where he can smoke and no one cares, where he can go out and get Duncan and no one's taking pictures of him. I knew from the beginning that they were not going to work. And the fact that you see him annoyed every time they're out together, I mean, that's just my guy. That's my guy, Ben. So
I love
I'm not surprised.
Honestly, the year that they were nominated for Best Screenplay, I think was 1997 for Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
I was in college. I watched it and I was like, I want to be them. I want them to be my best friends. Yes. I was like when they gave their speech and I was just like texting. Well, we weren't texting back then. I was calling on a hard line my best friend, Kara. And I'm like, are you watching this? Uh-huh. You know, I mean, it was like, to me, I am always rooting for them.
Me too.
Like the two of them, especially their friendship. I'm rooting for them. I thought the Dunkin' commercials were so funny. And awesome. I feel like he just needs like a nice lady from Boston who has a farm stand.
I don't know about the farm stand part. I think maybe. That's a little of you projecting.
I'm projecting. Does I mean, I love my Tam? Husband. I love my husband, but I'm just saying.
I think you're right. He needs a nice girl from Boston.
Yeah.
I'm not available, sadly. I'm taken. But I know many nice girls from Boston. I was once a nice girl from Boston. He needs a nice, regular girl.
Regular.
Okay? A regular girl.
Who's going to go and get Duncan?
Who's going to go get Duncan with me? He needs a regular girl. And J-Lo is anything but regular. She can pretend to be regular. She can pretend she's got her like, bodega order. She's not regular.
She's not regular. I don't think he wants to, have to be fit and, like, get spray tan.
He does not.
He's meant to be pale.
He does not.
He's meant to be pale.
He's meant to be pale. He's meant to have a bit of a paunch. He's meant to have sunken eyes from smoking too much. This is who he is. Let him live.
Let him live.
Yeah.
Essie, thank you. Thank you for joining me today. And Hysteria listeners, guess what? The show isn't quite over. We did something extra special for you this week. We know the avalanche of bad news can be so discouraging and you're ready to throw in the towel. We can't scream loud enough. This isn't over. This week, I sat down with four women running for vital Democratic seats across the country to learn more about their campaigns and the importance of local elections. That's coming up after the break. Welcome to Hysteria's Get In Losers, We're Running for Office Tour. This week, we're hitting the road for part one of our summer road trip. We'll be making stops along the way to meet some of our favorite female 2024 candidates. They're working tirelessly across the country trying to unfuck their states and make the U.S. better. So buckle up and get ready to vote and donate. We'll need these ladies in the driver's seat. We're kicking off our summer trip in the great state of Michigan, birthplace of my queen Selma Blair and Bing Cherries. Our first candidate is Representative Mai Song, the first Hmong American elected to the Michigan legislature. She's running for re-election in House District 13. She won the seat in a special election this past April, but new voting maps just took effect, so she has to campaign again. And the race is slightly more competitive than before. Mai, how's it going?
Good. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So, Mai, how did someone who went to the College for Creative Studies to pursue their love of art end up in public service?
That's a great question. I never thought I would ever run for office, but I found myself living in Warren in Macomb County for over 17 years as a small business owner and a mom to four young children. I just looked around me in 2020 and didn't see anyone in office who looked like me and really wanted my children to look up at our leaders and see someone who looked like them. So that was when I realized that I had to run for a local office. And I ran for the county commission, got reelected in 2022. And then last year was asked to run for the state house.
That is amazing. Now, you just mentioned you're a mother of four. A photo of your daughter at the Biden-Harris rally in Detroit caught traction on social media last week. It was adorable. We should all have her energy. What's it like balancing your family life and this campaign?
Thank you. Yes, we did attend the Biden event in Detroit last Friday, and we were behind the bleachers, and my daughter was holding up a sign, and someone snapped a photo of her and put it on X, and now I think it's garnered over 700,000 views.
And it's 900. It's 900,000 now. I checked before we got on.
It just keeps going up. But yeah, she is a bundle of joy. She has so much energy. I mean, they all do. And I take them everywhere I go. Ever since I started campaigning in 2020, she was about 18 months at that time. And she's just seen me campaigning every year. And so she understands that the political process and that there are elections and how important it is to participate. And I'm just really grateful to be in a position to be able to teach them, because my parents, as you may know, didn't speak a word of English and came here as immigrants. And so I was never taught the importance of participating. And so now as a mother, I want to make sure that I include them in that process. And so even when I go door knocking, or if I am in Lansing at the state capitol in meetings, usually they are with me, because childcare is such a big issue, affording childcare. And even as a legislator, and, you know, as a former small business owner, like, I've had to deal with that. And so I've always, they're always trailing behind me in any place or space that I occupy. They're with me.
So when you're out campaigning and you're talking to voters and constituents, what is on people's minds? What are people most concerned about?
A lot of people are really concerned about the cost of living, which has gone up, and wages are not following with that. Families are also concerned about safety, in particular safety around gun violence that we've seen so prevalent. And so I hear that time and time again. But those are, I would say, the two top things is, you know, addressing the rising costs and also protecting our families and our kids. And as my children are in school, I think about that every day as I get them ready to go to school, how I can keep them safe.
Mai, why is it so important that you are reelected to your seat? What are the stakes?
The stakes are really high. And Alyssa, you mentioned earlier in the introduction about how my district has really changed. And it's not just slightly a change. 50% of my district was redrawn. I currently represent a very blue, safe Democratic seat. Now I'm running in a marginal seat, and that Republicans are trying to flip the seat because the numbers are so close. We have done so much to bring back the Democratic House majority and to maintain the trifecta here in Michigan. And Democrats have done a wonderful job passing meaningful legislation around protecting women's reproductive rights, and also, you know, repealing a lot of the things that have happened during the previous administration around unions and making sure that we are protecting our workers. We have here in the Southeast Michigan a very strong union base, a lot of blue-collar workers and families who live on fixed incomes and are really just trying to get by every day. And so I think it's really important for us to maintain this Democratic majority, because we passed so much meaningful legislation. But for me personally, and for my children, and I think for so many families, like, representation is just so important, because we've worked so hard to build this progress. It would just be very detrimental for someone to come and to undo all of the things that we have done, that we've worked so hard for.
Mai, we are so excited that you were able to join us today. We will be following your race. Stay in touch. And keep Michigan blue.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Pack your bags. We're leaving the Detroit area and driving about 600 miles southeast of Pennsylvania, the state that collectively forced us all to take a Xanax on election night 2020. We're meeting Anna Payne, who is running to flip House District 142 in Bucks County. The Pennsylvania State House has a very slim blue majority, holding on by a single seat. A win for Anna would add crucial Democratic strength in the House. Anna, how's it going?
Hi. Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful to be here with you today. I think things are going wonderful. We are working really hard this year to make sure we flip this seat from red to blue. As you said, we have a super slim majority in the PA House in Pennsylvania. We have a one seat majority that we not only need to hold on to, but we need to expand, right? So we can get more stuff done. So I'm so grateful to be one of the candidates running and out there knocking doors and talking to voters.
So, Annie, you're currently town supervisor, and as such, you have been recognized for a climate action plan, upgraded playgrounds, and increased access to support services. What do you hope to focus on as a state representative?
So I think that there needs to be more of a cohesive relationship between state and local government, right? Because we need to be able to work together, especially when it comes to issues about community safety, and making sure that we get more grant funding, because there's a lot of things local municipalities want to be able to do, but they don't have the funding sources for it. And some of the municipalities are even so small, they don't have the capability to even be searching for grants, right? So I think that's like a key component of something that I would like to see addressed. What can we do to kind of empower those local governments to be able to do more for their local constituents and make sure it's a partnership working with the state? So we know exactly what kind of things our district needs assistance with, and we can hopefully help provide that or connect them to the right people in order to make sure we get that done for them.
You know, it's funny. I started out in politics as an intern for Bernie Sanders in 1995. And that is exactly one of the jobs that he focused on as a congressperson, was working with state level folks to make sure that people were getting all the resources they need. So that is very near and dear to my heart. You have faced several health challenges. You were diagnosed with cystic fibrosis at birth. You weren't expected to live past your teens. Just a few years ago, you were diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. Here you are, out there fucking killing it. How are you doing today? And how does being so involved in the healthcare system motivate you to help others?
Sure. I mean, every day is a gift, right? Mm-hmm. And I have had the privilege to have that perspective my whole life. And I think that's actually what drives me to want to be an elected official and serve in a capacity, because I have seen what it looks like and experienced what happens when people don't have access to quality healthcare, right? Mm-hmm. And it is scary. It's unacceptable. And people's lives, people suffer. Mm-hmm. And we don't need to continue to have that kind of healthcare system. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that we're taking care of each other, right? That's like the basics of it for me. It's like, how are we taking care of people when they fall upon their darkest times, right? And I think that my experience has only, and then getting diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer, like reaffirmed that, right? Especially as a young person with stage 4 colon cancer, the incidence and prevalence of that is on the rise.
Yes.
And we need to take action, and we need people who can speak to why it's so important that young people get screened, that we start having conversations with our doctors, and that we be fierce advocates, not just for, ourselves, but our family members, to make sure they're getting the kind of care they need so they don't end up, unfortunately, like me, with a stage 4 diagnosis at age 34. That's kind of one of my passions, right, is healthcare. And it's because I've had to live in the system to literally survive.
Absolutely. And when you mentioned going door to door, when you're going door to door and knocking and talking to constituents, what are you hearing? What are their biggest concerns right now?
So this concerns seem to be the same thing for most people. Women's rights, women's healthcare, obviously is a top issue. The economy, to some extent, of more so like kitchen table issues, like people are concerned, how are their kids going to be able to afford homes if the housing prices keep going up? Things of that nature. Community safety is important. People always want to make sure, the police are being funded at an adequate level. And that is something that I have done as a supervisor. Since I've been on, every year we've increase the funding by like almost $1 million each year. And we've made historic investments here in our fire and emergency services, because we know that times are changing. And we want to make sure that those robust services that you rely on in your time of need are there for you. So those seem to be the top concerns. But one of the biggest common statements I hear is actually that people don't feel like they know what their state representative does and that government is really working for them, right? So they feel a little disconnected about that. And how can we, as elected officials, local, state, federal, make sure that people actually see results,
yep,
right, from the tax dollars they're paying. And that seems to be the overwhelming survey question that I've gotten. You know, they're obviously, you know, the environment and things like that and are important, but I think people don't necessarily see the work that is being done. And if they don't feel that in their pockets, whether, you know, we have a rent rebate program now here in Pennsylvania, which is wonderful. Wow. So people can qualify for that. But if they don't know that they can apply, then they don't even know that that's available, right?
Totally.
So, you know, some of that comes down to communicating and marketing and how can we work together to make sure people are getting the information.
Anna, thank you so much for coming on Hysteria. Good luck. Bucks County will be lucky to have you. Stay in touch. Let us know how you're doing.
Okay, great. Well, thank you guys so much.
Thank you. The next leg of the trip is easy, only about 13 miles to northwest New Jersey, one of my favorite states, home to my guy, Bruce, the boss. We're visiting Sue Altman, a basketball player turned teacher running to flip New Jersey's 7th Congressional District. Her opponent made the district red last cycle, and we want to reverse that again. Sue, how's it going?
Hey, how are you? I'm glad to be here. Yeah, this is a super winnable district. It's in the New York City suburbs. We're like a couple stops away. It's very winnable, and I'm psyched to be on this podcast.
Sue, you're a former very successful basketball player and teacher. What made you want to get into public service beyond being a teacher?
So I had this moment with Chris Christie, and people in New Jersey know, even though nationally he's having this Never Trump moment, that he was such a bully. He was like the precursor to Trump, and he was our governor of New Jersey for I don't even know how long, like 3,000 years. And the teachers in the state were being treated so badly. And so I had this interaction with Chris Christie when he used to do town halls, which is something my opponent, Tom Kane Jr., never does. This is a throwback to when we still had town halls in New Jersey. And I got into a toe-to-toe with Chris Christie, which culminated him throwing a microphone at me. But he didn't know that I was a former professional basketball player. So I caught the microphone, corrected him because he lied, and then tossed it back to him. And then he came over to me afterwards and said, "Van, you're going to be a pain in the butt." And true words have never been spoken because I've been nothing but a pain in the butt in Jersey politics ever since. And now I'm running to take back the House.
Okay, so Sue, what are the stakes of this race?
Oh, my God. I think certainly in the last couple of weeks, we're all aware of the stakes of this race. Like, if Trump wins the presidency, the House could be the final insurance policy, the final firewall to the Trump trifecta. And so we need to take back the House. I tell my staff, I tell my folks here in the 7th District, we can cry a river about what we feel should and shouldn't be happening at the presidential level. And that's fine. But dry your tears, because we got doors to knock, we got money to raise, we have events to host here in this district, and we have the privilege of living in the district at this moment where the stakes are super high. We can get up in the morning every day and we can make a decision to make a difference. And that's what we're doing here.
Sue, let our listeners know, what are your top issues?
So obviously reproductive freedom and choice and women's rights. And those are all looped up into one thing. As a former athlete, as a millennial woman, like, it is inconceivable to me that the high watermark of women's rights in my lifetime was like when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Are we kidding me? It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So that's obviously something that we're really hammering home. And we have a lot of independent voters in this district, a lot of Republican women who come out of like the old school tradition of like Christine Todd Whitman. She was a governor from Hunterdon County, which is where I'm from, back in the day. And she was pro-choice and she was pro-environment. So those two issues right there are real familiar topics. And then you got the economy. Like, people are really sick and tired of things being so expensive, of people sort of minimizing the struggles that they're having. And if you can speak to that issue in this district, along with the other ones, and of course, democracy and the needing to uphold the rule of law when it comes to elections, I think that's a message that's going to resonate. I know it resonates.
Sue, thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck and stay in touch.
Oh my God, thanks for doing the work you're doing. We'll talk soon.
Buckle up and grab your boots, kids. Now we're journeying over 1,000 miles southwest to the progressive promised land of Texas. The state's long-held Republican stronghold has shown signs of waning, and Democrats are ready to take it over. This includes our next guest, Avery Bishop, who's looking to flip District 112. Avery, how is it going?
Hi, it is going. Talk about yeehaw giddy up here in Texas. The race is in peak season right now, and we are on track to flipping this seat come November.
First, let me say your slogan, Avery for All, is my favorite.
Oh, thanks.
I love it so much. You were the first Asian American Miss Texas. How did you go from pageants to politics?
The pipeline is strong from pageants to politics. Actually, when I was Miss Texas, I had a social platform called Y'all Means All. And during my year, I traveled more than 70,000 miles across Texas teaching about the importance of respecting different cultures because Texas is a minority-majority state. I was in hundreds of public schools, saw the suffering of teachers and students in Title I schools, and I knew that I had to run for office when Governor Abbott passed SB 17, which eliminated DE&I programs in colleges.
So you were the recipient of the Giffords Champion Award for Gun Safety. How did you achieve such an honor? What has made you a gun safety advocate?
I grew up in the generation that traded fire drills for active shooter drills. Mm-hmm. And I also have taught in public schools last year in the district that I'm running for now. And I personally know that students and teachers fear for their lives, mm-hmm. especially here in Texas, and especially in the climate that we just saw happen at a national level. For me, during my year as Miss Texas, actually, ironically, not what is expected of a current title holder, I actively talked about gun safety, especially when the school shooting for Uvalde occurred. So many children were innocently shot. There was not a great response or a rapid response to control the environment of when it happened. So I took up my advocacy, my social media platform with millions of followers, and decided to raise funds for the school down in the South and also advocate for safer gun regulation in Texas.
Pretty incredible. What are the stakes of this race? Why do you need to win?
The stakes are so high, Alyssa. I feel like that is the immediate answer. But here's the reason. Texas has continued to have lawmakers who are from the wealthy inside. Mm-hmm. There are no young people. There are no people of color who are ready to fight and represent the people that they come from, the communities that they come from. I am also the best choice for District 112. The demographics are quickly changing, and we need representatives, especially in Texas, who are energetic, hardworking, and have time on their side. I have so much to lose. I'm working full-time, mm-hmm. which is not what a typical traditional candidate does. I need to pay for medical insurance. I need to pay for my student debt. Right. I need to afford my rent. These are real struggles that people experience in Texas, and the representatives in our state capital do not reflect these people. And so that is why I'm running. That is why the stakes are so high. It's because the next session, when I'm elected, we have to ensure that we protect public school education yep. and also women's reproductive health care. I'm a woman. I'm young. I want to have kids, but not in Texas until I clean up the mess that's been made.
Not in Texas. SB 8, what a disaster. Avery, when you are out talking to constituents and voters, what are they saying? What's on their minds? What are they most concerned about?
You know, we've knocked thousands of doors already thanks to an incredible team and a fellowship program with hundreds of young kids already volunteering here on the ground. I have knocked and spoken to many progressives and even some lean conservatives. Oh no, kind of scary. But it's been a blast. Everyone from red to blue to purple to pink to green, whatever color you identify as, they are talking about public school education. Governor Abbott wants to attack public school funding and make sure that we privatize these schools and make it harder for students and teachers to have quality education. I'm a proud product of public school education.
Me too.
Reproductive health care is on the tips of everyone's mouths, including men, go men, who are opening the doors and talking about reproductive health care. And third, as you know, lots of storms here in Texas. People are without power in Houston. Mm-hmm. I was without power for a week in Dallas. The power grid and energy are also top of mind.
Avery, you're an inspiration. Thank you so much
Thanks.
For making the time to come on Hysteria today. Please stay in touch so we know how you're doing.
Yeah, we'll do. I'll keep you an update, and hopefully we bag this win in November.
Avery for All. Thank you so much. Thank you so much to all the candidates who came on to talk with me today. Sue Altman in New Jersey, Anna Payne in Pennsylvania, Avery Bishop in Texas, and Mai Song in Michigan. Listeners, if you want to learn more about how to help, head to votesaveamerica.com/2024. And an extra special thank you to Essie Cupp for joining me as co-host this week. We'll be back next week with an all-new Hysteria. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okolate, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week.